My name is Roman Guzman. Very happy to be here with you. I am speaking today with John Walsh. Hello, John.
Hello, Roman. Here we are.
Here we are. Now, John, you are, just so everybody knows, the reason that we're talking, you are currently the drum tech for Alan White in Yes.
That is correct. I don't say the word yes unless I have to, so I'll say that's correct.
Excellent. Gotcha. All right, so that's why we're talking, but I can imagine there's a long road between wherever one gets started on being a drum tech and working with a band like Yes and a drummer like Alan. So why don't we go ahead and just kind of rewind a little bit and talk about how you got to be a drum tech, what led you into that profession?
Well, I was a drummer as a teenager. I played drums in several bands and, you know, enjoyed that, and it was a lot of fun. And then I became a singer, believe it or not, in another band or two in my late teens. But in New York and in the music industry in general, it's so tough to be successful. You know, some of the greatest musicians I knew were bartenders and house painters and stuff like that. And those are great professions, but you know, when I saw that these guys weren't making it in the music business, I knew how tough it was going to be. So I enjoyed the little bit of performing that I did, but I had no delusions that the success comes if you can write songs and get lucky and get seen by record companies. At least back in the 70s, it was like that. So I knew that it was going to be tough and, you know, probably wouldn't be able to crack the big time. And, you know, I was a big music fan and I got to, I started seeing a lot of concerts and all that and was kind of fascinated by watching set changes at Radio City Music Hall and watching how, you know, all these guys make some bands go away and come back on the stage. And I thought it was a pretty cool thing and it interested me. So I started, you know, looking at that. I took a course in high school, even then, you know, stage crew. And I thought it was pretty interesting. And in Long Island, the tri-state area, New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, in the 70s, there was a massive club scene. It was five or six nights a week where all the local clubs were, there were bands, and it was really, really heavy. Some of the big bands that came out of it that you know were like Twisted Sister, Zebra, and the band that I started with was the Good Rats, and they were a local band. They were all original. They had a record deal, and they played a lot. We played five nights a week. The drummer, his name is Joe Franco, and he had called me up one day because I was a fan, and he was getting an endorsement from Zildjian and from Premier Drums, and he wanted somebody on the road with him that knew about drums. Up until then, they'd had people that just kind of brought the gear in and out. So I had known him for years, and he knew I was a drummer, and that's how I got the first opportunity to work for them. And that band, the Good Rats, started doing things like opening up for Rush and the Grateful Dead and Styx when they were at their, you know, a very high point. So I got a lot of good experience at playing arenas and big theaters with some substantial acts. And I worked for them for over 4 years. And it really helped get my foot in the door and give me a good boot camp, if you will, of what life is like on the road. Even though the Good Rats were famous, they never made it big, but we had a lot of contact with, you know, Journey. We did a tour with Journey and a bunch of dates with lots of bands. One of the first Ozzy Osbourne shows ever in America, the promoter put up the Good Rats on because they'll sell tickets. They were a great starting point with me. And then I moved on to another Long Island band, Zebra, just cracked a record deal with Atlantic Records and had MTV videos that were really important at the time. So I moved on up constantly all the way, Twisted Sister, and then, you know, Miles Davis. Well, then things started happening. I started meeting other people and getting with band managers that would move me around, and that would happen later on as we get into other things, like, for example, David Byrne's management was David Bowie's management. So I moved from one to the other over the years. So that covers, I think, your question about that's how I got started, and that Joe Franco was my my first customer. He wrote the first double bass book called Double Bass Drumming.
So basically, like with most entertainment fields, whether you're someone who's fronting a band or behind the scenes, it has to do with not just being in the right place at the right time, but also being somebody that people like to work with. Hangability, Greg Kinn calls it hangability. Somebody you want to hang out with who knows what they're doing. It sounds like you just stepped right into there, and then it just, boy, it just seems like it was just a whirlwind for you early on.
Well, yeah, it was. And that's funny, you know, for me to talk about myself that way. But often I have said, you know, there are other guys that can do this job, but if you're not a good person, and you're, what we say is, do you give good bus? Do you want to be living in a tour bus with, you know, somebody like that, you know, instead of me? Because that's, you nailed it. That's really important.
Yeah.
People will get a job or not get a job because, like, oh, man, I don't want to work with that guy. Can't we get somebody else, you know? So, so that is a good point.
Yeah, the talent needs to be there, but it also needs to be somebody you want to spend that much time with.
Exactly that. Yes, you have to know what you're doing, you know.
Yeah.
And after 40 years, either I'm pretty good or a damn good actor, because I must have been fooling a lot of people for a long time.
Yeah, I've had a pretty successful radio career, but for me it was the opposite. I believe in fake it till you make it, and I feel like any day these folks are going to figure out that I don't know what I'm doing, and I'll go back to retail. But until then, I'm having the time of my life. Now, for folks who don't know all the details, myself included, I mean, I know what a drum tech does, and if you didn't know, you could figure it out by the name of it. But, you know, from what we see when we're standing in the audience, the guys who just come and set up the drums, or the guy who comes up behind Mick Fleetwood and pours beer in his mouth during the solo, there surely must be more to it than that.
Yeah, you're right. I often jokingly make the analogy of people think that, you mean he doesn't set up his own drums? Or... That's a job, and the other one is they pay you for that? Because they don't know. They think that for an 8 o'clock show that the band strolls in at 6:30 and sets up their ramps and stuff like that. Well, no, that's not the case. We come in at 9 o'clock in the morning, and it starts with the lights and the sound and you know, all the other departments that are working there. And, you know, even a drum set that's not too big has to be mic'd up, and you have to change the heads, you clean the cymbals and all of that. And, you know, you're part of a bigger team. So if you're playing in a club, well, that's more like that, where they can show up and throw this stuff up really quickly. But not when you're doing a show that's in theaters or arenas or stadiums.
What does it take to get a kit show ready? Do you have to tune it every time?
Yeah, I tune the drums every day. Whether or not I'm changing the heads, you don't have to change all the heads every day. I did a tour for 3 years with the Blue Man Group, and they were it was a huge show, arenas around the world, and there were three big drum kits. So I staggered which kits needed to be changed, like the drum heads, so that on any given day I wasn't doing 20 or 30 drum heads. So one of the three kits I would do every day, and that worked out okay. With Alan or with Yes or a lot of other bands, you can get away for a day or two, except for the snare drum. You know, these guys hit the snare drum a lot, and that's got to be changed, you know, almost every night probably.
Wow.
So so your tuning question is, the drums are so musical. I go back to the Blue Man Group, the actual notes had to match a piano key, because the music was written for the drums to hit those notes. So that was some fine tuning going on there. With rock bands, it's a little bit more selective of, you know, what fits right, the sound of the drums, whether you have some small drums like we do that pan down to some larger drums. So it's got to be right. And, you know, it doesn't take that long because the equipment that we use is very good. And, you know, the heads don't lose their tone. I'll change them before they start to get muddy.
Who's the hardest drum kit that you've had to tech for?
That's a great question. It's a great question because no matter how simple it may be, the intensity doesn't fade. It's like no matter what, whether it's, you know, the drummer for Joan Osborne or the drummer from Kiss, it's
right.
You know, it's got to be right. There's no let ups, as we would say. Now that I mentioned Kiss, Eric Carr had a huge drum kit, three kick drums and lots of toms and roto toms and cymbals and Simmons pads and two racks of electronics. So that probably took the most attention out of most of the ones that I can think of. Yeah, that was big. I guess that's the biggest kit that I ever had, and that took a lot every day. You know, a lot of drums, a lot of tuning, a lot of changing heads because he poured his heart into it and he left it all out there. That guy.
Wow. So now, once again, for those of us who don't know, I think we would assume that once the drums are ready to go and the show starts, that John gets to go backstage and eat food and drink beer and hang out with the groupies, and it's a great big party until it's time to strike, right? Isn't that right? Surely that must be how it goes.
Oh, yeah, you've read my book. Yeah, that's right.
So what do you do while the show is going on?
Just before that question is, the point that should be made is, so much of what I take care of is also the person, or the people in this case. You know, you're not just looking after the equipment, you're looking after your guy. And it's, you know, hey, how's everything? You know, what else is going on? How you doing today? Here's some sticks for the dressing room and all that stuff. So it's not just, you know, like a bricklayer lays a bunch of bricks and then stands back and, okay, the people need attention as well. So
right.
You're taking care of the person as much as the equipment. So to get to your during the show situation, a lot of it is making sure everything is going okay. When you're working with an instrument like drums or percussion, people are hitting things. They're not just playing a piano or strumming a guitar. There's physical contact.
And they're beating it up, yeah.
Yeah, you know, things can go wrong. I'm very fortunate that for the most part, for the latter part of my career, the equipment is really good. They make drum hardware so much better now, where things aren't slipping or falling, that sort of thing like that. So during the show specifically, you know, Alan has an electronic Yamaha kit that's intertwined with his, and we have some special effects that we use for that. And I'll be changing the programs during the show, depending on the set list and what kind of sounds that are coming out of that. Alan has his own mixer now, his own monitor mixer, and he's on in-ear monitors, which is a great thing for his hearing and for everyone else's, instead of a small PA system behind the drum kit that we had for so many years. Now he's on in-ears, and he can, you know, his mix is right there where either he or I can change it. But it's so much more consistent now with a digital board that it doesn't need a lot of tweaking. So you don't see, for so many years, you'd see musicians waving their hands to get the monitor guy's attention, and this goes up and this goes down. Now it's right at my fingertips, so, and I'm right there for that. And just kind of watching out, as you know, I look after Jay and John Davison as well. John has a electronic percussion rig and some acoustic percussion pieces that, you know, I put them out every day where he knows where they are and he can come get them. And I take care of his acoustic guitar and his tambourines and all of that stuff. And with Jay, as everybody knows by now, he plays, you know, about half of the show. So when we swap drummers in and out, I've got to take out the drum throne and the snare drum and change the programs on the monitor board, and then get one guy to get off the riser and get the other guy to get on the riser and plug in their monitors. And it takes about 33 seconds, which is wow, just about enough time for somebody to say, well, good evening, how you doing, and all that sort of stuff.
Right.
So we make it as quick as we can to keep the flow of the show going. But it's a lot of detail now with two drummers and John as well. So everything has to be all ready to go, and I'm paying attention all the time. Unlike what you said before about drinking beer and all that other stuff.
Yeah. I don't imagine that, one day you're sitting at home binge watching Breaking Bad for the fifth time, and then the next day you're just boom out on tour. I assume there's some even mental, physical kind of preparation for you personally before you go out on tour. What's that like?
Yeah, that's true. There is a lot of that. And even physical, because sometimes if you're home for a month or two or six, as the case may be, you're not using the muscles that you would be when you're working. I enjoy the physicality of the job. It keeps me moving a lot. And although I'm not lifting heavy things by myself, there is a lot of physicality and stretching and all that. And I'll start to pay attention a week or two. I'm fairly active anyway, but specifically, there's some stretching that I'll start doing, knowing that that's what I'm going to be doing at work.
Right.
And mentally, it's knowing that I'm going to be away from home for these days, it's 2 months. Back in the 80s and 90s, I would work 45 weeks out of a year.
Wow.
With artists at that time, Roman, was different. They had to push their records. So there was more attention to that. A band did a record and they went out on tour and they toured
right
for a year. I wasn't away for 45 weeks, but the tours would be that long, and we'd have a week break or 2 weeks at some point several times throughout that. But that was a big grind back then, when people had to sell records and you were on the road for a long time. You really do get in the groove. But
right,
it's calmed down for me. Yes doesn't do that anymore. When I started with them 20 years ago, that was the type of thing that you went out for a long time. Did I get off the point of the question?
No, not at all. In fact, that kind of leads into the next question, which would be life on the road for you. I mean, we've all seen the movies. We know rock stars, and they go out on the road. They focus on their work, and they go to church on Sunday, and they come home, and everything's great. But for a drum tech or for the crew, what is life on the road for you guys like?
Well, I'd have to say it's now and then, because, again, mm-hmm, 40 years ago, I was driving a Ryder truck compared to riding on a luxurious tour bus like now. So it was very different back then. It was, when you're young and paying your dues, you're driving the truck and you're setting up the gear, and there was no such thing as stagehands. We did it all ourselves, and it was a lot of hard work. When you're young, you can do anything. So it's a lot different and better now over the years, where, being on a tour bus most of the time, there are some tours where you do a lot of flying, and that's tough because there's a lot less sleep involved. When you're on a bus, you wake up there, and
right,
that's a great way for us to travel. That's why we can actually do it. We stay on hotels on days off, but when we do two or three or four in a row, we just sleep on the bus and shower in the venue. And the beauty is your commute is zero. You get
right
up and it's right there, and you walk in and somebody's making you breakfast, and then the day starts.
Nice. We've talked about your resume a little bit before, but just looking at the list, from Twisted Sister, Miles Davis, Sting, Cyndi Lauper, Stevie Wonder, David Sanborn. Is there a different type of work that you do? Is there a different type of teching, I guess, would be the question, when it comes to different types of music, like between Twisted Sister or David Sanborn? What are the differences between the genres? Or is it more geared towards specific drummers, no matter what the genre is?
If I'm a drum tech, and I've been a guitar tech and a stage man, I did a lot of stage managing, like for Sting, Stevie Wonder, Joe Jackson, people like that. I was the stage manager. But as far as drums go, unless there's a big difference between the size of the kits, not a lot different. Not. I would say there isn't a great difference. No, I mean, the tunings might be different, and you use different. You want to get different sounds, so you'll use different types of drum heads and maybe warmer cymbals for jazz as opposed to hard rock crashes for a rock band. So it's the equipment that makes the sound a little bit different, but basically the drums are fairly consistent.
Now, has there been anything that you've needed to do, like, personally over the years to make sure that you still have your hearing intact as the years go by, or has that been affected?
Yeah, I'm very lucky. Right from the start, it was pretty primitive back then, but we had what the police use at the gun range. I had earplugs, and I used them right from the beginning because somebody else did and said, hey, this is a good idea. I listened a lot when I was young and listened to the people that were doing this longer than since I started. And I wore these police issue earplugs from the beginning. And soon after that, I would at least wear headphones or something to protect. And then when in-ear monitors started becoming prevalent, I got them right away. And they protect your hearing. I'm sure you know how well they work. They isolate all the outside sounds. And especially if you're near a drum set, the drums don't hurt you that much. It's the cymbals. Listening to cymbals, the frequency is bad for you. So I've done very well. I have good hearing because I wore protection right from the start. And to this day, I wear in-ear monitors, and I don't need the volume to be really loud. So I'm lucky and very fortunate. So many people I know my age or older, like, what? I'm lucky. I'm in good shape as far as that goes, Roman.
So take advice from the folks who have been doing it for a long time.
I had good teachers. Yeah. I paid it whatever the subject is or was, or how to behave on a bus, how to push a guitar amp up a ramp the right way and not hurt yourself. There's dozens of examples, whatever it is, and I had good people that I worked with from the beginning, and I paid attention, and I learned a lot. I soaked it all up, and funny, now I'm the teacher. So, guys that haven't been doing this, hold on there. No, let me show you this. And it's like when you decided that you become your parents. So it's a little bit like that for me. Right. You know, like, wow, I sound like my father when I did that. Hey, shut the door. I say that now, I'm famous for that. The people walk on the bus and leave. Hey, shut the door, you know.
Now, in 91, you were working with Sting.
That's right.
Was that the Soul Cages tour, right? Was that Vinny on drums?
That was the Soul Cages, and that was Vincenzo Caliuta on the drums. Yes. I wasn't his tech, unfortunately, because I was a stage manager. But I used to sit with Vinny every day, and he actually, at my request, put a couple of licks in a specific song, and he would look at me. I like when you do that. I told him that he did this little hesitation hit on the snare drum. And I said, man, could you do that? And he would do it. And he would look over at the side of the stage and I'd say, yeah, nice. Thanks, man.
Nice.
So I got to know Vinny very well. I never got to be his tech in subsequent years because of my schedule and his schedule, but I always wanted to. But when I see him, it's always a great thing, and we still laugh and joke about, you know, we had a lot of fun together. But to watch Vinny play every night.
Oh, yes.
So great, you know.
In my opinion, he's in music circles, as well known as he is, but outside, one of the most incredibly underrated drummers. I mean, that guy to me is like just top of the heap. I think he's awesome.
Yeah, I say top, you know, everybody's got their favorites. I like to throw them all in a drawer, the top drawer. You know, you could pick on, well, Simon Phillips and Buddy Rich and, you know, these guys are, they're in the top drawer. They can all do something that the others can't. That's what makes it exciting. But I would compare them for the fun of it and not to be critical of, you know, well, this guy's better or that guy's better. It's just, you know, they all do different things and they're all monsters. And and Vinny included, he would do some things. I don't want to bore you with a lot of details, but, you know, he'd be playing a song and you could hear the hi-hat and the ride cymbal at the same time. And I'm looking and I said, wait a minute, how's he doing that? He's actually playing two different things. He's got two hi-hats on one side and he's hitting the ride cymbal at the same time. It's like,
wow,
just incredible. So you mentioned Vinny specifically, but I have a great history with him and just such a terrific thing to watch that guy play.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I haven't had the chance to meet him, but I agree, watching him play is amazing. I imagine you've got some, you know, crazy stories, crazy situations, just being on the road, working with these guys. There must be some that stand out.
You know, Miles Davis we had our own plane time to time. And in Europe, we were able to do shows that were far away because we had our own plane. And this was the crew and the gear had their own plane. And we were flying from Spain to Germany. And what they did with the plane was it starts barreling down the runway and it lifts up a little bit like that. And then it comes back down. They didn't tell us that they do a test run first to see if the gear and the heavy gear and everybody gets off the ground. They didn't tell us. So we think that the takeoff's aborted and we're not going to make it. You know, so thanks a lot, guys. You know, you could tell me in Spanish and I would know. I got left behind at a truck stop once. And this is back before cell phones, when I had told the driver, I was riding the band bus back to California. The group was called Striper. They had to take 2 weeks off because Michael, the singer's voice was bothering him. So I was going to California with them. I wasn't a regular on the bus. And I told the driver, I'll be back. Don't forget me. And he forgot me. And I ran out. Ran out of the truck stop and I'm running down the road because I see a red light and the bus is like a quarter mile away. I said, I got to catch this bus. And the light turns green and he takes off and these people in a Mustang pull up and they see me running. And I said, can you catch that bus? And they move over and I get in the car and the Mustang catches up to the bus and I wave my hand out the window and the driver looks over and he sees me and his jaw drops about 3 inches. again, before cell phones.
At some point, I would imagine, maybe not necessarily, you know, a crazy story, but at one point you're young, you've got your whole life ahead of you. And then at some point, was there a time down the road where you just kind of looked around, like took a moment to look around and go, wow, how in the world did I get here?
I did that this morning.
Oh, yeah.
I do it every day. It's, I say that all the time. You know, it's 44 countries and 300 cities, and I've been just about everywhere. And I say it all the time. It's like, wow, this is amazing that, you know, I got to do this. My father had to be in the Navy to see the world, and I'm doing it with rock bands. Yeah, it's every day I think about that. And I was always amazed, especially the first time I went to anywhere, the first time, you know, I got on a plane or the first time I went out of the United States. It was, you know, wow, what's this going to be like? I was always fascinated with Europe and Asia, never thinking I would get to Asia or places like that. So, like I said, I have that feeling all the time, Roman. It's really, I look around every day. I'm in Lancaster, Pennsylvania tonight. And it's like, well, okay, here I am today, you know. this summer we'll be in 33 other cities. I never get snooty about it. It's still amazing. And I still love to travel. I do well with traveling. I sleep well on a bus. I'm okay. It's 900 to 1,000 airline flights I've taken. And, you know, I fit in the seat. So that's a big part of it. They're trying to phase everybody out, but I still fit in the seat. So I'm okay. And
I don't know whose quote this was originally, but a neighbor of mine used to say, live every day like it's a miracle, because it is.
That's my go-to answer now. I just moved to San Diego 2 months ago. I was a New Yorker forever. And my answer now, how you doing today? And I'll say, every day you wake up is a good day. And
nice,
people nod when you say that, people nod their heads and say, wow, that's right, because nobody else says that. They say, oh, okay,
right.
Because it's true. It's a good day when you wake up.
Is there anywhere you haven't been or anything you haven't done that you still want to accomplish?
I haven't been to India, but that's a tough place, man.
Yeah.
You got to go first class. You got to have air conditioning all the time. And we almost went with Cyndi Lauper, but there was a problem with the currency, and they wanted to pay us in diamonds because their money was worthless. So they wanted to pay us in diamonds, and we couldn't figure out how do we do this, you know, legally, you know. So that didn't happen. But I've thought about this before. You know, I could take a trip to Antarctica just to say I've been on seven continents, but
okay.
I'm not going to do that just to say that. There's
right.
There aren't any gigs there, so I'm not going to do that. there really isn't. I'm pretty happy with all the traveling that I've done. And I don't think I need to go anywhere else. I've seen the best of what the earth has to offer. So I'm good.
No, you wouldn't go to Antarctica because there's no gigs there. I used to work at a grocery store, and I always tell my wife, like, you know what? I'm not going to go get groceries. I'm not going to walk into a store unless I'm being paid to be there. I'm not going to go to Antarctica unless there's a gig.
Yeah.
There's a reason for us to be there.
Right on. Because there's not a lot to see there, man. There's not a lot to see there. So
that's awesome. Well, man, it just sounds like you've led a, well, back to that word, a miraculous life. The folks that you've worked with and the places you've been, that's amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. I always feel lucky and fortunate and just happy that, you know, that you make sacrifices, though. There are, you know, you're away from home a lot, and
mm-hmm.
and that's difficult when you have sisters, and I have three sisters, and it, you know, you miss a lot of parties, birthday parties and graduations,
right,
and stuff like that. But I'm lucky that my family always knew that, well, at least it's for a reason. And everybody was happy that I found something that I enjoyed doing. I have family members that work for pharmaceutical companies, and they travel
right.
as well, but it's not the same. I enjoy my job so much that certainly makes up for being away. And, you know, when I was young and single, I didn't care at all. It was just,
right.
I'm going, and that's that.
Getting back to Alan White, is there anything, I'm not looking for like anything that would embarrass him, but is there anything about him that maybe would be surprising, that maybe a regular fan would know? For example, is he like a huge Golden Girls fan and has all the DVDs? Or what is there about Alan that might surprise us to know about him?
Wow. Okay. Well, I think that when you're a good person, that word gets around. Everybody knows. And now with the internet and all the social media and all that stuff, anybody that's ever met Alan knows, oh, you know, he's a really good person. And that is true. I think the one thing I'd like people to know about Alan is that he's so musical. And drummers get a bad rap about, like, okay, well, he's the drummer.
Right.
You know, Alan writes music, and he wrote keyboard parts for a lot of songs since he joined Yes. So he's very musical, and he can hang with the keyboard players and the guitar
uh-huh.
players and talk about serious parts of music. Drummers in general don't get that, you know, even though some of them don't deserve it, but Alan does. He's really
right.
very musical. I could say, oh, yeah, he's a great guy. Everybody knows he's a great guy. So
uh-huh.
he is very musical. I don't know about the Golden Girls, though, Roman. I don't know. I don't know if that's his thing, you know.
I don't know why I picked that one. It just seems like a show he would like.
Well, I won't tell him you said that, but
I love the Golden Girls. Are you kidding? I love that show. So he's a great guy to hang out with. I imagine over the years you've got to hang out with Alan quite a bit.
It's not too much hanging out because, you know, when between tours he's home or he's doing some of his other things that he does and I'm off with somebody else for a lot of my tenure with Yes, I would work with them but then go back to somebody else and vice versa. When I was working for David Bowie, David was going to do a promo tour for a few weeks, and it was going to be when Yes was going to do the Masterworks tour in 2000. And, you know, if you left David's band, you don't come back. That's
wow.
pretty much it, especially for musicians or that sort of thing. And I said,
right.
I asked David, I said, you know, we're looking at 3 or 4 weeks of promo stuff, but I could work for Yes for 44 weeks in the year 2000. And David said, it's all right. You can go. You can go work for you, Yes. And, you know, and you come back next year. It'll be all right. So I said,
wow.
All right, David, thanks a lot. and then it was the Masterworks tour in the year 2000. So I kind of got lucky with that. You don't want to say no to David and then
right.
and then you don't get to come back. But he let me.
How specifically did you get connected with Alan?
It was, I was Eric working for KISS, Eric Carr's drum tech, and our Ludwig rep, his name is Todd Trent. I got to be very friendly with him. And a few years later, down the road, when Alan had a drum tech that was leaving, Todd said, well, I know a guy that'd be fine for you. And it was Todd that introduced me to Alan, and they interviewed me over the phone, Alan and the tour manager and all that, and that's how I got the thumbs up from both of them, and,
nice.
And it was because of that. It was the Ludwig connection. So,
And what year was that?
1999. The Ladder was the record, and that's 20 years ago, right about now when I started.
Right. Are you a fan of Yes music?
I still have the ticket stubs. I still have the ticket stubs from, you know, the mid-70s going to see them. New Yorker, it's Madison Square Garden, and we go to every
nice.
Show. Yeah, absolutely. It's so funny that the people that I bought tickets for are, you know, I'm shining a flashlight showing them where to go. and that includes Chris Squire. It was always amazing to see these guys play because they're such great players. And getting to know Chris as well, just like, wow, this guy was, he was a hero. And now I'm helping him put his shirt on.
Right.
So I never lose track of that moment. I shake my head and say, this guy's my friend now, but just so, so amazing.
Well, John, thank you so much for taking the time to chat. It's been an absolute pleasure speaking with you.
And great for me, Roman. Nice to speak with you and to... you know, strum up some of these great memories that I've had over the years. And
for me, you know, it's just always great meeting somebody else that I might be able to hit up for tickets when Yes comes to town. So really a pleasure for
I wish you a lot of luck with that, Roman. You know, good luck with that. I think for you, Roman, we'll sneak you in the back door or something. Yeah, we'll take care of you.
All right. Well, thanks again, John. And hopefully we'll get a chance to see you out on the road.
I hope so, too, Roma. Thank you so much.